But still, he nodded. Great. Okay. So he's distant, and I'm thinking maybe I'm doing something wrong. I mean, things have been a little slow lately, but that's mainly because of my cycle. You do know what a female cycle is, right? His mouth opened, and then closed, and then it opened again, only to close again. Well, just so you will have a full understanding, humans reproduce by having babies. It's part of the whole alone thing I was just talking about, and the cycle is part of a woman's reproductive system, for lack of a better term. In this system, an egg is released each month. The egg can't do much on its own, so it just waits around until it gets attacked by a man's, let's call them soldiers. They come marching in all uninvited-like, but if that doesn't happen during the month when the egg is waiting around to be invaded, then the woman's body gets rid of it. And let me tell you, this process is not fun. There's all this cramping and bloating. No, seriously, it feels like one of those blowfish things has ballooned itself open inside of you. And to top it off, the pants that you could button 2 days ago? Yeah, they don't button anymore. It seriously sucks. Sally checked his reaction, taking a breath as though she'd run out of air as a guise to look him over. His body was rigid, and she swore she could see the wheels turning in his brain, working out an escape plan. That chance, genie boy, Sally thought to herself. You wanted to talk. We are going to talk. Oh, man, that reminds me of a time one of my best friends, of course, you know who she is since you keep the history and whatnot. Anyways, Jen, that's the best friend, was on her period. That's another word for cycle, just in case you weren't aware. I have no idea why they call it a period. The only thing I can figure is that, like, the period means the end of a sentence, the period for a chick means the end, too. The end of rational thought as the hormones take over. She waved her hands. I'm getting off topic. Anyway, so Jen was on her period and had run out of feminine products. I am not even going to begin to explain what those are. She made me and our other friend Jackie go with her to the store, because chicks don't do anything alone. We'd probably all pee in the same toilet at the same time if there was one big enough. Anywho, we're at the store looking for the correct aisle, and Jen, being herself, starts yelling, "Code red, this is the code red. All available employees assist the teenage girl bleeding to death on the feminine products aisle. I repeat, this is the code red, people. This is not a drill." Sally did laugh then. She'd yelled out the words, just as Jen had, and Thadric was staring at her as if she'd sprouted three heads. Sally clapped her hands together and let out a sigh. "Oh, geez, good times." "Good?" Thadric asked, sounding utterly horrified. She chuckled. "Yes, most definitely good. I've got plenty more where that came from." Oh, she said, hopping in her seat. "This is a really good one. It's another Jen one, of course. She tends to be the one who manages to get herself into interesting situations. So she's married to her mate, Decibel. He's like this big, stoic, no-nonsense alpha male. About a month after they got married, she had her period. Jackie and I were hanging out in my room, and she comes busting in, hollering incoherently and flinging her arms around. Once we finally got her to calm down, we were able to see what she was holding in her hand, waving it all over the place. It was a note from Decibel. Usually, she would have showed it to us just so she could rub it in our faces that she was having alone time. You remember what alone time is? She loved to rub it in. I know, weird, but then everyone has a thing, and that just happens to be hers. This time, she showed us the note because she was panicking over what to do. I won't go into details about what Des wrote in the note exactly, but let's just say Des was hunting, and Jen was the prey. She isn't one to be embarrassed easily. Usually, she's incapable of actually becoming embarrassed, but she's different with him. She allows herself to be more vulnerable. Well, that was one of her moments when she suddenly had the need to be accepted in all her messy glory. Pun intended. Sorry, couldn't resist. She starts sputtering out, "He expects action, which you guys totally know I would be all over that like mosquitoes on a bare leg." We ask her what the big deal is, and she says, "The big deal is I'm bleeding like a freshly stuck hog. I can't even fake a headache because he'll be able to smell it. I mean, how messed up is that? He can smell my period. That's just all kinds of wrong. So, instead of the good old headache excuse, I have to shut him down with, 'Sorry, babe, but I'm pretty sure you only like your prey bloody when you're in your wolf form.'" Sally nodded at the traumatized Jen before her. I know, she has a way with words. Just hope you never have the misfortune of being the object of her quick-witted tongue. Chick can be brutal. Okay, let me think, she said as she tapped her lips with her finger. I know I've got more hilarious stories like that.
No,
Thadric said, finally having jerked himself from his stunned silence.
That's enough of that.
You're right, she nodded. We need to get back to the original topic. So, the distance between me and Costin, I totally don't think it has anything to do with my period. Jen claims that men have periods too, and I'm beginning to agree with her. Maybe he's just on his period. She made quotations with her fingers. And his hormones have him acting out of character. Yeah, that must be what it is. Sally whooshed out of breath. Man, that was good. Thanks for fleshing that out with me. All right, new topic. She clapped her hands rapidly while grinning like an idiot. What's your stance on boxers versus briefs and the whole relation to sterility thing? Dalton held up a hand to indicate that he was finished. He bent forward, bracing his hands on his knees. He was out of breath, but it had taken all of the males sparring with him to finally wear him out. Had he been fighting only one wolf, he might have killed him, not necessarily on purpose, because his control was nil. Perry had announced that Vulcan was going to let Jewel go in 2 days' time, and then she'd left him in Ferry. To say he was pissed would have been like saying the sun was a little warm. The rage had instantly consumed him, dumping adrenaline into his bloodstream. The only thing that kept him from tearing off through the forest in search of the Veil had been the presence of the Alphas, including his own. Finally, evening out his breathing, he had the sudden urge to shed his human skin. He needed his wolf to help him deal with the emotions flooding him. Dalton tore the clothes from his body and phased instantly to his wolf. For a moment, he didn't know where he was going to go, but then he pictured the room where Jewel had laid for several months, still as death, lost in her own mind. But still, she'd been there with him. He took off at a run. He didn't slow down as he rounded the side of the house and bolted for the window he'd used to visit her. He leapt, and his head slammed into the glass, shattering it. His body followed, and the glass crunched beneath his paws as he landed. Dalton didn't stop to think about whether or not his feet were being cut. He made a beeline for the bed that had been hers. It had been stripped of the sheets, but she'd laid there for so long that her scent lingered on the mattress. He jumped up onto the bed, giving it a good sniff before laying down. After several minutes, Dalton gave in to the urge to roll around, covering himself in her scent that was left behind. His feelings were confusing to him. He needed her with a desperation that rivaled the way a male felt for his mate, and yet still the pull of the mate bond wasn't there.
"Doesn't matter. She's ours," his wolf snarled.
He'd become increasingly agitated. His wolf needed action. He wanted to hunt, but Dalton didn't have the slightest idea where to begin.
2 days' time, he reminded the wolf. 2 days too long.
Dalton agreed. It didn't change the fact that she simply was beyond his reach. Without the bond, he had no way to find her. He pictured her face in his mind, and he shook like an addict needing a fix. After everything he'd been through in his long life, who would have thought that a human female who loved books and useless information would be the thing that brought him to his knees? He turned his head up toward the ceiling and howled, long, deep, and mournful. The sound filled the room and traveled out the broken window. It started in his lungs and traveled up his throat and out of his mouth, but the source was his cold, broken heart. The other wolves joined in his chorus. He was so focused on his own grief that he didn't hear the door open nor close. As his howl died, he became aware of his alpha standing against the wall across from him. He held a pair of sweatpants in his hand, but didn't offer them to the wolf. Dylan watched him quietly. Dalton met his gaze briefly before looking away. He didn't lower his eyes. It wasn't in him to be submissive at that point. There was only one who could bring him to his knees, and it was no longer his alpha.
"Perry will get her back," Dylan told him.
Dalton growled.
"I know," Dylan held up a hand. "I know you want to be the one to rescue her. No, I take that back. I know you should be the one to rescue her. But at this point, does it really matter? Isn't it more important that she be returned to you, no matter how that has to happen? Dalton phased. He caught the sweats that Dylan tossed at him and jerked them on.
Of course, I just want her back no matter how that has to happen. But that doesn't mean it doesn't kill me, that I wasn't the one who could save her.
He roared when Dylan started to interrupt.
It kills me because she is mine. I am the one who is supposed to keep her safe, and I failed. Not only did I fail to keep her safe, but then I failed to get her back. What kind of mate does that make me? How can she ever feel safe with me?
I won't argue with you, Dylan said calmly. If I were in your place, I would feel the exact same way, as would any male in your shoes. So it would be pointless for me to tell you that she doesn't expect you to be perfect. She doesn't expect for you to be all-powerful.
I should have kept her safe.
Dylan made a dismissive gesture with his hand. That's not the point, at least not anymore. You need to start preparing yourself for her return. She may not be the same person that she was. Dalton shot his alpha a glare.
She will still be Jewel.
Yes, but there is no telling what Vulcan has done to her. Dylan pushed away from the wall when Dalton took a step toward him.
Damn it, Dalton! I know you don't like to hear it. I know it's horrific and disgusting and enraging, thinking of all the possibilities, but you have got to be prepared. You say you don't feel a pull toward her anymore, at least not the way mates do, so that begs the question, how will she feel about you? I am not trying to be cruel. As your alpha, it is my job to protect you. I just want you to be prepared for the fact that she might not run to you with open arms. That doesn't mean it's because she's mad at you or blames you. It could just be because she doesn't feel like she knows you. Humans spend a much longer time courting one another than we do. When the mate bond was present, she felt instantly drawn to you, like she already knew you. But she may not feel that way anymore. You need to be prepared to be patient with her. I'm not an emotionless cold bastard, Dylan, Dalton snarled. I won't expect anything from her. I just want her safe. I want her out of the hands of that sadistic prick. I want her here with me. And if it takes a day or 1,000 days, I want the chance for her to fall in love with me, bond or no bond.
Dylan stared at him for several silent, tense moments, before nodding his head and then silently leaving the room. Dalton stared at the closed door for several minutes. His alpha's words played over and over in his mind. She may not be the same person that she was. He wanted her to be whole and intact. She'd already been through so much, and it hadn't broken her. Regardless of how strong she was, everyone had a breaking point. He hadn't known his until he'd met Jewel. She was his breaking point.
"Hang on, little dove," he murmured under his breath.
He gave the empty bed one last look, and then walked over to the broken window. Dalton jumped out and landed softly on the ground. He didn't know where he was going. He just knew that sitting around waiting wasn't an option. If he had to run for the next 2 days to hang on to his last shred of sanity, then that is what he would do, be it in wolf form or human. Dylan had been right. He didn't want to hear about the things that could have happened or could still be happening to her. He didn't want to think that Vulcan might have broken her. Dalton could only hope that she would be able to forgive him for failing her.
"I will make it up to you," he vowed as he took off into the forest.
If his existence was only to help her heal and live a happy, safe life, then that is what he would do. Even if she didn't want him as her mate, he would still do everything in his power to ensure her happiness. Anna's eyelids felt heavy as she opened them and blinked several times to clear away the sleep. She pushed herself upright from the plush chair into which she had folded herself and looked slowly around the room. The sight of the fairy tale-like room reminded her that she was no longer with her new healer friends. She looked around for the small pixie woman. Adira, she remembered, had been her name. But there was no sign of her. The fire still burned in the small hearth, but the songs of the birds had quieted. A painful clenching in her chest and the subtle feeling that she wasn't alone had Anna clenching her teeth as she remembered the reason she'd ended up with Adira in the first place. She needed to think,
to really process the changes that were happening so rapidly in her life. It was one thing to watch one of her new friends find their mate, or to see ones like Sally and Costin fitting so well together. But it was an entirely different thing now that it was happening to her. Feeling a presence in her mind had been alarming, especially when she'd felt her own soul responding to it. There was a part of her that wanted to turn around and run straight to him. She didn't understand that part. It was almost as if a stranger resided inside of her, and for the first time, Anna was meeting her. The stranger was trying to tell her that she belonged with the wolf that pursued her, that by his side was where she was meant to be. But the rational side, the side that she had relied upon for so long, the human side, was telling her that she didn't know the man from Joe Blow on the street, and therefore would not be running heedlessly into his arms. She rubbed the sleep from her eyes and stood up to stretch out her tight limbs. Though she'd slept, it hadn't been peaceful, which was evidenced by how tight her muscles were. As she rotated her head around on her shoulders, she saw the tree branches part, and Adira walked in.
"How did you sleep?" the pixie asked with a friendly smile.
"Not great," Anna admitted. The woman nodded as though she understood.
"It's hard to sleep well when so many changes are taking place."
She paused and then seemed to remember she was holding something. She held out her hand.
"Here, I picked these for you."
Anna stepped forward and took a small basket of berries from the woman. Her first reaction was delight. Anna loved plants of any kind, both flower and fruit-bearing. But then she considered what she knew of fables and, stupid though it may seem, she couldn't help but wonder. She looked down at the berries and then back at Adira.
"There isn't some weird rule about not taking food from pixies, because then you will want to dance forever and forget all your family or anything, is there?"
Adira laughed.
"The things you humans come up with is quite amusing."
She shook her head.
"No, not that I'm aware of."
Anna nodded.
"Good, because I'm starving."
She dug into the berries as she watched Adira move about the room, straightening this and that. She seemed quite content in her home, even though she appeared to be the only one who lived there.
"Do you get lonely?"
Anna blurted out before she could think better of it. Adira turned away from the bookshelf she'd been organizing.
"Why would you ask that?"
She didn't seem offended, of which Anna was glad.
"You live alone."
Anna didn't word it as a question.
"I do."
"And if I remember correctly, we walked quite a ways on our way here, which means you don't live close to anyone," Anna pointed out.
"So I guess I was just wondering if you get lonely out here by yourself."
The pixie shrugged.
"Most of the time, I'm quite content, but it is nice to have someone to talk to every once in a while."
She motioned towards Anna.
"Well, I always talked whether there was anyone to listen to me or not," Anna admitted.
Adira's brow drew together.
"You live alone as well?"
It was her first reaction to deny it. She'd been protecting her mother so long, trying to make sure no one found out just how much time she spent by herself, and worried that the state would step in and take her away to some orphanage. But as she stared at Adira, Anna realized she was tired of lying, tired of having to keep the secrets she protected so carefully.
"Yes, I've lived alone for a long time." "But you're so young. You can't possibly be old enough to be on your own."
Anna shrugged.
"My mom didn't think so." "She just left you?"
The accusation in the pixie's voice was stern as she frowned at Anna.
"My mom is a gypsy, like a real gypsy, not what I am. She actually lives the life of a gypsy, traveling around with her people. She says if she stays in one place too long, she begins to feel restless, and that if she stayed still for too long, evil spirits would be drawn to her."
Adira made a clucking sound with her tongue.
"That's hogwash. When you have a child, their needs and wants become your own. What you want has to take a back seat, and evil can come a-knocking all at once, but it can only get in if you invite it."
Anna wanted to say that she agreed, but at the same time, she could see her mother's point of view. Her mom had been raised within the gypsy community. It was what she knew. She'd stayed in one place while Anna had been young, but as soon as Anna started high school, she'd started rambling. She began traveling with a community of gypsies that often came through New Orleans. Once Anna had graduated from high school, her mom had pretty much told her to have a nice life. No, that wasn't fair, Anna thought. She hadn't just left her. Her mom had tried to explain to her that she needed to travel, and... Anna's eyes snapped up as they met Adira's. Oh, crap, she muttered as the memory of the night her mom left came crashing down on her.
She knew.
Adira stepped toward her.
She knew what?
This, Anna motioned around her. She knew all this was going to happen. Adira motioned to the chair.
Sit.
She took the basket of berries from her hands and took the seat opposite her.
Now explain.
After I graduated from high school, my mom came to see me and gave me the keys to the apartment and a wad of cash and told me that it was time for her to go. She said that she had a trip to complete and... Anna swallowed before continuing. And then she said I also had a big journey coming that would require me to let go of my past. I thought she was just talking about the whole journey of life crap. She liked to talk about how life was a journey and how everyone had different paths and blah, blah, blah. She said that some people had rocky paths while others had paved highways with only the occasional pothole. I really didn't think she was saying anything that was important.
Don't be too hard on yourself, Adira said gently. Most children don't realize that anything their parents say is actually important until much later in life, when they finally discover that the world doesn't actually revolve around them.
Thanks, Anna said, unsure of whether she should be insulted or not.
I still think your mom leaving you on your own while you were still in your schooling was a selfish thing to do. But then we are generally products of our parents and the life they led. If her parents had been nomads and that was the life she knew, then maybe she didn't think what she was doing was wrong.
Anna nodded. It was hard when she would leave, but I couldn't be mad at her because it was just who she was. She never meant to hurt me, and I know that, but...
It didn't make it easy to be alone,
Adira finished for her. Yes.
Anna, can I ask you a question?
Anna nodded.
You sounded concerned about me when you asked if I felt alone. It's obvious now, after hearing a little bit of your story, that you have been alone a lot of your young life. If being alone is something that you fear, and there is no shame in that, then why are you running from him?
Anna's heart was pounding painfully in her chest, and the rush of her blood filled her ears. She didn't want to answer. She didn't want to say it out loud because then it would be true. She watched the other mated pairs and saw the love and longing in their eyes. Such love was impossible to hide, and she wanted that. But she wanted it so bad that if she ever got it, losing it would destroy her. She'd been alone a large portion of her short life. She was used to being alone. It sucked, but it was familiar.
Is it crazy that when something is familiar, no matter how unhealthy, destructive, or sucky it is, it still feels safer than the alternative? Even though you could choose something better, it's too scary to reach out and grasp it because there is always a risk in change. There is no risk in staying where you are with what you know. If you accept him and all that comes with him, you will have to let go of everything you have ever known,
Adira said as understanding dawned on her face. Anna nodded.
Everything he represents, love, safety, comfort, companionship, intimacy, friendship even, those aren't the norms in my life. I don't say that because I want anyone's pity. It's just the way it is. And though I have dreamed of change, of something better than what I have known, now that I'm faced with it, I'm terrified.
Anna's eyes filled with tears as she looked down at her Converse tennis shoes. I've been lonely for so long, and yet I am too much of a coward to change it. How on earth did this goddess, this great Luna, think I could ever be valuable as a so-called precious gypsy healer? I've got nothing to offer anyone other than my inability to accept something better than what I already have.
Oh, but that's the beauty of it,
Adira said as she reached over and took Anna's hand.
There is something so beautiful in the broken ones being the ones to bring healing and change to the world. Someone who has never been touched by hardship or trials doesn't have the capacity to understand the hurt in another's eyes or the emptiness in another's heart. It takes a person who has been burned to understand the fire. As a child, I can remember watching my tribe work the fields, and every autumn they would set fire to the prairie where we grew our spring crops. Finally, one fall, I went to my father and asked him why we burned down all of the plants until there was nothing but dirt left on the ground. He told me that stripping the land of everything and starting from scratch every year helped to revitalize the soil. It took the devastation of fire to cause the ground to yield the most productive crops. Sometimes with life, it is the same. Don't doubt for a minute that you have something amazing to offer the supernatural world. What could be more supernatural than a human overcoming the trials and pain of her own life to then in turn help others in desperate need? Anna stared back at the little pixie woman, whose small hand squeezed her own tightly. She would love to think that she could make a difference in some way. She would love to think that she would be able to embrace all of the new being thrown at her with open arms. But if those things were true, then she wouldn't be hiding out in a fairy tale-like pixie house while her supposed soulmate waited for her. "Just think about what we've talked about, okay?" Adira said with a final squeeze of her hand. "You don't have to make a decision right now. That's the great thing about choices, Anna. They are yours, and yours alone to make." Anna nodded, giving Adira a small smile as the pixie got up and left the room, leaving her to her thoughts. She knew the pixie was right, but she also knew the same saying could apply to mistakes. They were hers, and hers alone to make, and to live with.
"You don't have to be alone, mi amor." His voice was barely a whisper in her mind, but his thick Spanish accent and deep baritone caused her toes to curl. Anna didn't react to the presence she felt in her thoughts, but neither did she attempt to shut him out. She waited, but he said nothing more. Anna decided to ignore the small part of her that was disappointed. "You're scared of him, yet you want him to use this mysterious bond, and at the same time you don't want him to use it. You want change, but you fear all that it means," she thought, and then muttered to the now empty room. "It's no wonder guys just want the milk without purchasing the cow. Who the hell wants to listen to a bellowing cow who doesn't know what she really wants?" Despite knowing she was a bellowing cow, it was still difficult for her to accept such a serious decision. This wolf, man, whatever, didn't just want to be her boyfriend. He wanted to be her mate, her everything. From what she understood, there was no walking away from a Canis Lupus bond. That both comforted her and terrified her.
"If you aren't planning on making a decision right this second, perhaps you would like to eat a real meal. I imagine those berries didn't do more than tick you off."
Adira's voice pulled her from her thoughts.
"Food is always welcome when there are decisions to be made. In the South, we tend to eat our way to a solution, and if no solution is found, then we just eat to comfort us from the lack of a solution. It all works out in the end to having a new dilemma of needing a sign plastered across our butts that says, 'Wide load,' and the process starts all over again." Adira's eyes widened as her lips pursed. "That's a tad disturbing."
"Just a tad?" Anna laughed. "It's as disturbing as a praying mantis after mating." Chapter 8. When in doubt, don't let the other guy know he has you beat. If you have to lie your butt off and give the performance of a lifetime, then that is what you do. But you never, ever lie down and declare yourself the loser. There is only dignity in losing when all options have been exhausted and all BSing has failed. Then you can tuck your tail with pride. Tuck your tail. Ha ha. See what I did there? Humor me, people, and laugh. Parizada. "That's it. I'm done," Perry declared as she stood from her perch on the dilapidated porch. "He's had his fun. I've humored him long enough. I've got bored healers to deal with, alpha males who are about to flip their lids over not meeting their mates, a sadistic fae who thinks creating a bunch of witches is going to somehow solve all of his mommy issues, and a bonded pair who is no longer bonded and yet both still alive. I don't have time to put up with Thadric's eccentric nonsense."
"What are you going to do?"
Elle asked as she too stood. "What I do best," Perry said with a flick of her wrist.
Her body began to pulse pure white light as she allowed the full glory of her race to show. The space around them lit up, bathing all of them in its warmth. Perry faced the crumbling house and held her hands out. She hoped that Thadric's magic would hold against her theatrics, because if not, the house was going to come crashing down. Perry chanted under her breath, and the structure began to shake. Gradually, the vibrations grew in intensity until they all had to grab onto something to keep from tumbling to the ground.
"Thadric!"
Perry's voice boomed out, even though she hadn't yelled. She used her power to project it as she called on the djinn.
"I so name you, Thadric of the Djinn, keeper of the histories, all-knowing scribe and leader of your people. Show yourself. Quit hiding behind your magic. Release my healer and stand before me."
She didn't know if it would work, but Thadric was an incredibly proud male. She figured if she appealed to his ego, then perhaps she could convince him to come out of hiding. She waited, continuing to use her magic to intimidate, though she had no real power over the djinn. There were none, other than Thadric and those in his line, that were more powerful than a high fey. And that was only because they were the keepers of knowledge and the guardians of the history of all of their races. So really, she was just trying to annoy him. He knew she couldn't cause any real harm, which, if Perry was honest, greatly irritated her. After several minutes of her shaking the crap out of the house and taunting him a bit more, the front door finally opened. Costin ran forward, only to be thrown back before he could ever reach the threshold. "Fool," thought Perry. The wolves' biggest weakness was their rashness concerning their mates. Thadric ducked his head down as he stepped out of the house and onto the porch. Costin growled at the large djinn.
"You must be her male."
Thadric's deep voice filled the night.
"Her mate," Costin snarled. "I am her mate, and I want her back."
The djinn wasn't intimidated. He turned to look at Perry. His lips were pulled tight, but his eyes looked bored.
"Could you please desist?"
He motioned towards the house and then to her.
"It's a little distracting."
"Since you asked so politely," Perry said, her voice dripping with sarcasm. All at once, the shaking stopped and her light faded until they were once again simply standing on the porch of the old home, lit by a single porch light.
"Where is Sally?" Perry asked him.
"She is unharmed," Thadric said, "though I did consider putting a muzzle on her."
Costin started to lunge forward, but Soren held him back. Perry let out a sigh.
"Could you please refrain from pissing her mate off any more? I really don't want to have to explain to his alpha why he got the crap beat out of him by a djinn."
"Can you blame me for taunting him?"
Perry couldn't help but chuckle.
"No. They are quite easy to rile up. Nevertheless, I have to deal with them, and it's already hard enough for me to not turn them into unsavory things."
"I can imagine it must be quite difficult for you," Thadric agreed, a smirk formed on his lips. "Especially since you're mated to one."
"Damn all-knowing djinn," Perry thought. "He's the only one truly safe from my wrath."
"Are you two done?" A feminine voice came from behind Thadric. "Because as much as we are all enjoying listening to you two shoot the breeze, some of us have important things to talk about."
"Sally,"
Costin called out, his voice barely human. "I'm fine, Costin. Genie boy just wanted to have a chit-chat. Apparently he is lonely." Thadric let out an exasperated sigh. Sally mimicked it, obviously making fun of him. "Get over yourself, Thaddy boy, and move out of my way." Perry's lips twitched as she fought her smile. Sally had come into her own over the past year, and she was turning out to be quite the spitfire. Perry was proud of her.
"We do have things we need to discuss, Thadric," Perry spoke up. "Will you allow us entry?"
After several minutes, he stepped aside. Soren released Costin, who jumped up the steps and wrapped his healer in his arms. Perry's stomach clenched as she watched the two. Costin held Sally's face tenderly in his hands. The look on his face made it perfectly clear that, for him, the sun rose and set with her. He spoke so softly that she couldn't hear him, but she could only imagine what he was saying. Sally smiled up at him and stood up on her toes to press a kiss to his lips. Costin pressed his forehead to hers, and he shuddered under his mate's touch as she ran her fingers through his hair. Perry hadn't finally understood, until Lucian, how important touch was to the Canis Lupus. Sally's touch would be the one thing that kept Costin from phasing into his wolf and losing his cool. That was how powerful the touch of a mate was. Watching them had her aching to be with her own mate. As the others followed Thadric into the house, Perry paused.
"I miss you," she told him, reaching out to him through the bond. She felt his pleasure at her words, and it made her smile. "I'm glad. I miss you more. I need you."
His voice was a warm caress in her mind. She felt his hand on her face as he used their bond to make her feel him. Perry felt goosebumps break out across her skin.
"I need you as well," she admitted.
It was something she would only ever admit to him.
"Then I will be waiting for you in our room. Return to me soon. My patience only goes so far."
Perry loved the possessiveness that laced his words. She'd never been wanted, not the way Lucian wanted her. He made her feel desirable, for reasons other than her power. Lucian desired her as a woman, his woman, and there was something powerful in knowing that.
"I won't keep you waiting much longer. I love you, Lucian." "I adore you. I cherish you, and I love you, Perizzada."
Perry closed her eyes as she let the truth of his words wash over her. He was her constant. When all hell was breaking loose, Lucian was the one she could count on to be there. He would hold her up when she could no longer stand. He would comfort her when she fell apart, and he would never think her weak for it. His abiding presence in her mind gave her the strength she needed now, and would sustain her until she was finished dealing with the djinn.
"What do you know about severed bonds?"
she asked Thadric, as she stepped into the room where the group was seated. Costin had Sally in his lap, his arms wrapped tightly around her as he glared daggers at Thadric. Sally simply looked amused.
"What types of bonds are you referring to?"
The djinn practically purred, knowing he had the Great Fae exactly where she didn't want to be.
"Are you talking about the bonds of matrimony? The bonds of addiction, the bonds of debt, or perhaps a type of bondage requiring a little more leather?"
"You know damn well, I am talking about mate bonds, between the wolves and healers,"
Perry growled, almost stamping her foot with impatience. Thadric harumphed, clearly disappointed that Perry was in no mood for games.
"Ah, well, then you must be speaking of Jewel Stone and Dalton Black, I presume,"
the djinn said as he crossed his arms in front of him. Perry nodded.
"Their bond wasn't just broken, it has been completely obliterated. Dalton has no draw or pull towards her. It's as if she wasn't ever his true mate. How is that possible?"
"It is possible. Though such a spell has not been performed in a very long time, it is extremely dark magic, and has been closely guarded by those who know about it," he began. "What has happened to Jewel and Dalton has only happened because she is a gypsy healer."
"So it can't happen to two mated wolves?" Sally asked. Thadric shook his head.
"The magic only works on healers because, typically, they are human. There have actually been some who have been wolves, but most are human. The magic in a gypsy healer is different than that of the Canis Lupus. One who is very powerful can use his own blood to break the bond between a healer and the wolf."
"What can fix it? How do we bring the bond back?" Perry asked.
The look Thadric gave her told Perry that she wasn't going to like his answer.
"I am afraid that the destruction of the bond is permanent."
"Wait, what? Seriously?" Elle and Sally said at the same time.
"Can't you do something?"
Sally asked the djinn.
"Aren't you supposed to be all-powerful? This big bad genie, who is even more powerful than Perry, can't you help?"
Perry understood the desperation in Sally's voice. She felt it as well. The idea of the bond being broken between her and Lucian was painful.
She couldn't imagine what the reality of it must feel like. A look of pity actually crossed the djinn's face.
As powerful as I am still a created being, not a creator. I do not have the power to make something, only to change what is already in existence. A bond between mates is something magical and complex, and it is created by the great Luna. I do not have that power, nor does any created thing.
What good is all your power if you can't help? Sally pushed away from Costin as she stood. Her lips were pulled tightly across her face, and her eyes flashed with anger. But beneath that anger was pain. Sally hurt for Jewel. She was a healer and felt things so very deeply, not just for herself, but for those she cared for as well.
"We didn't come here with the intention of asking Thadric to fix it, Sally," Perry told her. "We came here so that we might understand what the problem was."
"What's the point of understanding it if you can't do jack about it?" Sally snapped.
"Sally mine," Costin said as he reached for her. "Please, come here. Be calm, love."
Perry was surprised that Sally didn't tell him to take his calm and shove it down his throat. Instead, she let the tears she'd held back fall and allow Costin to wrap his arms around her.
"So, as far as you know, the only one who could do anything about this would be the great Luna?"
Perry asked, wanting to make sure that she understood completely what the djinn was saying. Thadric nodded.
"I am sorry that I cannot help."
He glanced at Sally and Costin and then looked back at Perry.
"This evil you are facing, it is only going to grow."
"What do you mean?" Al asked. "How can we fight it?" He shook his head.
"I cannot say more. There are rules even I must follow."
"Well, now that we all feel as though our puppies have been kicked, I guess we need to head back."
Perry motioned for them all to gather around her.
"Thank you, Thadric, for your time, even though you accosted my healer."
"Mine,"
Costin snarled. Perry rolled her eyes.
"She's not a damn squeaky toy, Wolf. Give it a rest."
"I do wish I could do more, Parizada,"
the djinn sighed. She gave Thadric a nod. "We all wish we could do more, but all we can do is play our part. Will we see you again?" A small smile appeared on his handsome face.
"Ah, Perry, with lives as long as ours, I feel quite certain our paths will cross again."
With that, Perry held out her arms for each of her comrades to touch, and then flashed them from the djinn's home. They reappeared in Perry's living room.
"Do you want me and Sorin to return to the Pixie Realm?" Al asked her.
"Yes, but I'm tired, and you all look like you've been trampled by wild pigs. You're exhausted and need rest. We will all get a good night's sleep, and then tomorrow I will take you back."
She didn't wait for any arguments they might have for her. She had a mate waiting on her, and she missed him. Perry flashed to her room and found Lucien standing at the window, looking out into the night. She took a minute to appreciate his exquisite form as she watched him. He was a powerful male. His shoulders were broad, his back wide and muscular. Her mate had blonde hair instead of the jet black more often seen on the Romanian males. It had grown some since he'd been found in the dark forest and brushed the back of his collar. Perry loved running her fingers through it. She loved the feel of the strand slipping through her fingers, and loved even more that she was the only woman who had the right to touch him in such a way.
"How did things go with the djinn?"
he asked her, not turning away from the window. She knew that, despite his posture, his attention was completely on her. He knew exactly where she stood, knew exactly how long it would take him to get to her, and would know if she moved even an inch. He was completely attuned to her.
"It could have gone worse," she said as she walked further into the room.
Her feet moved toward him, seemingly of their own accord. She itched to be near him, and her hands fidgeted with the need to touch him.
"He could have certainly done something to Sally instead of just snatching her."
"What did he want with her?"
Lucien asked.
"He was curious. He's been alone for a very long time."
"It probably would have been better if only males had gone,"
he pointed out. Perry shook her head.
Sorry, Wolfie, but I have to disagree. Had only males gone, he might have been much less inclined to help. Hate to break it to you, Wolf, but women have power.
Lucian chuckled as he finally turned to face her.
Believe me, female, I totally understand the power of a certain female.
Is that so? Perry purred as she stepped closer to him.
Yes, Lucian answered. That is definitely so.
How do you know of this power?
Perry took another step closer to him as she looked into his silver eyes.
I know of it because it is the only power that could hold me captive. I'm held captive by it as completely as if I were back in that dark forest. Only this time the scenery is much better.
Perry tilted her head back to look up at her mate. He towered over her smaller frame, but he never attempted to use his size to intimidate her. He'd only ever used it to shelter her, protect her, and love her.
Verzada.
Her name was a whispered plea as he cupped her face in one of his large hands. His other hand wrapped around the back of her neck and pulled her closer. Lucian ran a thumb across her bottom lip, and she shivered. He seemed completely enthralled by her.
I am, he said distractedly, picking up on her thought. Everything about you enthralls me.
He pulled her closer and leaned down until his lips were pressed firmly against hers. Perry wrapped her arms around his neck and pulled him tightly to her. It didn't take long before Lucian's hands moved to her waist and he picked her up. She wrapped her legs around his waist as he walked her back until she was pressed against a wall. Perry reveled in his power and his strength as he held her. His lips moved against hers with the ease of a familiar lover. Lucian tasted her as though she was the most exquisite dessert to ever grace his taste buds. She parted her lips and let him slip his tongue into her mouth. They both groaned at the same time as flavor burst across their taste buds. He tasted of spice and sugar, causing Perry to only push closer.
More,
Perry practically growled as she tugged at his shirt. She wanted to touch his flesh, to feel the heat of his skin and the tautness of his muscles beneath her fingers. Lucian set her on her feet so that he could let her go and help her remove his shirt. Once it was gone, she leaned back to look at his chest.
You really are beautiful,
she told him, feeling heat flush her skin. Only Lucian could ever cause her to feel the slightest bit of insecurity. It wasn't something she cared about with others, but she cared what he thought of her.
I am nothing compared to you,
Lucian told her as he began to relieve her of the things keeping him from her skin. As they pushed away the world, forgetting briefly about the trouble, turmoil, worries, fears, and all that was bombarding them, they simply focused on each other. Perry knew that she should feel guilty for indulging in this time, with everything falling apart again. She should be more focused on the fact that Jewel was in the hands of a psycho, and Gustavo was losing his crap, and Anna was freaking out. But she couldn't focus on those things. She needed time for herself. Lucian needed her, and she needed him just as much.
"Quit thinking, love,"
he murmured against her neck as he pressed tender kisses against her flesh.
"There is nothing left you can do tonight, so let me take care of you."
"Bossy, even in the bedroom," she teased through the bond. Perry had never realized how intimate having the mental bond would be, especially when they were together physically. For a brief moment, her heart twisted for Jewel and Dalton's loss. They would never have this.
I obviously need to do something else if you are still thinking about other things than me,
Lucian growled. And then he proceeded to do things that caused Perry to give him her full attention. Jewel woke with a start. Her head throbbed as though someone was playing the drums and using her brain as their cymbal. The last thing she remembered was Vulcan finding her lost in his castle, and then proceeding to try to beat her into submission. She'd held out until he'd threatened her mother and those she loved. All of the abuse he'd handed out came flooding back as her body reminded her that she'd taken the thrashing of a lifetime. She'd known that if he'd realized she was attempting to escape, that there would be repercussions, but she honestly hadn't thought he'd treat her like his own personal punching bag. Her stomach ached, and she was pretty sure she had a couple of broken ribs. The bones in her face throbbed, and her left eye was swollen, partially closed. Jewel hoped that he would stay away and give her time to heal. She might as well have been wishing for the sky to fall. Footsteps were echoing down the hall, and her stomach was attempting to empty what little it contained. Jewel stood, not wanting to be sitting when he walked in. She might have had to pledge herself to him, but she would not tuck her tail like a whipped dog. The door to her room flung open, and in walked Vulcan.
"Honey, I'm home,"
his voice reverberated off the walls. Jewel noticed the wild look in his eyes and was beginning to truly believe he was taking some sort of recreational drug. And despite the fact that he wasn't human, it was making him high as a kite.
"Today is the day, my dear. We have much to do before the grand finale. Come."
He made a motion with his hand for her to follow. When she didn't budge, his face quickly contorted into what could only be described as monstrous.
"Move!"
he snarled at her. Jewel hurried forward, and to her shock, his face returned to its previous state, manic smile and all. It was as though the outburst and grotesque look had never been there. Vulcan grabbed her wrist as soon as she was in reach and flashed her to the usual room. He didn't give her time to ask questions or wonder about his intent. A knife was suddenly in his hand, and he was slashing the wrist of his other hand. He let the blood pour from the wound into a cup. The dark red liquid was thick as it flowed from his body. Once the goblet was full, he took a cloth and wrapped it tightly around his wrist. In the blink of an eye, he was suddenly before her. His hand grabbed her face as he lifted the liquid to her lips. Jewel tried to turn her head away, but Vulcan held her face so tight she couldn't move. He forced his fingers into her cheeks to open her mouth and then put the chalice to her lips. He tipped the cup up, and slowly the liquid, still warm from his wrist, poured into her mouth. She gagged, but still was unable to move. Where Dalton's blood had been warmth, spicy and invigorating to her body, Vulcan's was cold, putrid and dead. The chill of it was so frigid that she was sure her insides would turn to ice. It was bitter and burned her throat. Jewel squeezed her eyes closed and tried her best to ignore the power she felt growing inside of her. Like a creek follows the natural downward flow to empty into a river, where it joins and then continues on, so his magic followed the path to her magic, seeking out its source and attempting to merge with it. Jewel wasn't sure how long the whole awful moment lasted, but Vulcan finally lowered the chalice what seemed like hours later. He held her mouth closed, ensuring that she swallowed all of the blood. When he was satisfied, he released her. She didn't want to look at him. Her body felt violated, though he hadn't touched her. Her heart broke over the invasion, and she longed for a hot shower. But deep down, she knew that she could never wash the filth away. Jewel didn't want to see the satisfaction in his evil eyes. She hadn't been with him all that long, but she had to admit she'd learned a great deal. Most importantly, and a lesson that she would never forget, was that Vulcan was evil in its purest form.
"How do you feel?"
he asked her, his voice eager for her answer. How did she answer that honestly, and yet in a way that prevented him from beating the snot out of her?
"Full," she finally croaked.
And though that was partly true, her stomach was full, what she really felt was utter emptiness, as though the blood he'd forced into her had eaten a hole inside and pushed everything into it.
"You will be a force to be reckoned with once our magic merges. Once the transformation is complete, you will be able to pass on your dark magic simply by sharing your blood. You will build my army of witches. And the best part is, you won't be able to resist the need to release your power. It will build inside of you until you feel like you are going to explode, unless you let it go."
He laughed as though he hadn't just told her she would be birthing evil into the world, though not necessarily by way of her loins. She thought again that this was actually much worse than giving birth to babies that would grow up to be evil. These beings that she would birth would be fully grown adults. The world will not have to wait until they grew up before feeling the effects of their malice.
"Now that it is done, my dear one, as much as I have enjoyed our time together, it's time for you to go."
Her head snapped up and her eyelids met his.
"Go?"
"Well, yes,"
he said, as though she should have realized this all along.
"You can't make witches if you are locked up in here. Not to mention, how will you torture your mate? Oh, wait, he's not really your mate anymore, is he? Which is just as well, since I have grown quite fond of you. In fact, I've decided that once our magic fuses, I might even claim you as my own. Eventually, you won't resist the power growing inside of you. You will long for it. And then you will be one worthy of being my mate. And just like the male Canis Lupus, I do not share. So Dalton will get to see you again, but he will not be permitted to touch. You are unsullied right now, and I will not have you soiled by his filth."
Vulcan reached out and pressed his hand to her chest, just over her heart. Jewel tried to back away, but she couldn't move. All she could do was watch and listen as he muttered words in a language she didn't understand. She felt more coldness flow over her, and she realized he was placing a spell on her.
"A simple protection spell, my dear," he said with a maniacal grin after he'd finished his muttering. "If he touches you with any intentions of lust whatsoever, then my magic will awaken. The darkness hidden in you will seep into him, intensifying, multiplying. And we all know that the werewolves are already vulnerable to the darkness hiding inside of them. They do their best to keep it at bay, sure. But in the end, if they don't have a mate to help them, it overcomes them. This spell will only speed up his descent into feral madness. You will watch him lose himself to his beast. Slowly, naturally. But if you join with him and let him defile you, you will watch it happen right before your very eyes. How satisfying it will be to know you are right within his reach, and yet so very far away. Seeing you, but being unable to claim you, will just be one more nail in his coffin."
Jewel's stomach rolled at the reminder of the destroyed bond. She'd tried so desperately not to think about it. The only relief she could find in it was that perhaps he wouldn't desire her in any fashion, and then they wouldn't have to worry about the darkness destroying him instantaneously.
"I don't know what's better," Vulcan continued. "The fact that you will make fully functioning witches, or the fact that your bond is destroyed, and the darkness in Dalton will grow without your light. Or the fact that if he still wants you, he cannot have you. His own pack members will have to put him down like a dog, and you will watch without any feelings toward him at all."
Just as Jewel had been about to respond, Vulcan flashed to her side. He grabbed her arm and flashed them out of the castle. When they reappeared, they were standing in the corner of a busy street with rain pouring down and wind whipping around them, causing the rain to feel like tiny knives slashing at their skin.
"I'll be watching, little Jewel," Vulcan said, looking down at her. "Make me proud."
And then he was gone. Jewel looked around her, up and down the street, and quickly realized he'd left her in Times Square. Judging by the temperature and the presence of both Thanksgiving and Christmas decorations, she surmised it must have been late November. She'd never been to New York City and had always wanted to come, but she never dreamed it would be after having been held captive by an evil fae, filled with his black magic, and scared beyond anything she'd ever experienced. And she definitely didn't think that she would have visited during late autumn wearing only a sweatshirt. She was pretty sure that this was no way to enjoy the Big Apple. Jewel didn't know what to do next. Did she contact her mom? Who else was she going to call? It wasn't like she'd gotten the cell phone numbers of any of the other healers. She hadn't really had time with all the running, being in a coma, and then being captured. She looked down at her clothes, the same ones she'd been wearing when Vulcan had taken her. They felt foreign and strange against her skin, after having been in the robes she'd lived in for however long it was that she'd been in Vulcan's clutches. The days and nights had run together, and she couldn't even be sure now. The wet jeans clung to her, and the soaked sweatshirt felt heavy on her shoulders. That was all she had, just the clothes on her body and the shoes on her feet, which were becoming increasingly waterlogged. She had no money, no food, and no phone, so she couldn't call someone even if she knew who to call. She had no resources, but worst of all, she had no hope. Jewel dodged the people who were scurrying past. She received only a few odd looks, reminding her that her face looked as though someone